So as we always do, we tend to start off with a good discussion. So on your tables, okay, I'd like you to have a little chat. Who's the greatest? Who's the greatest? And by that I mean, I want you to think about your own field, something you know about. Okay, politics, running, football, whatever you know about, who's the greatest in your opinion in that particular area? And yes, Trevor, I'm willing to accept there is a greatest train collector somewhere. Okay, who's the greatest in your particular area? So have a chat upon your tables. No, the one I was chatting about, because I was chatting on this table, shall I say the one I thought of? Yeah, we talk about Bevan. Some of you going, who? Who is Bevan? Anybody know? Politician? Yeah. Started the NHS. He was the person who started the whole of the NHS. He was a politician that said, this is what our country needs. And the Queen, yes, outstanding in her field. Fantastic. Go on then. Yeah. Yeah, it's just been stratospheric, hasn't it? And I say that, and he's got rockets as well. So there we go. Fantastic. Go on then. So he is still, you reckon, the best ever? Yeah. Schumacher, fantastic. Steve, did you discuss anything at the back there or not? Muhammad Ali is about, so that's obviously boxing, yeah, fantastic. And then over here? Shakespeare, of course, yes. Okay, the literature table. Or, sorry, Shakespeare, Enid Blyton, yes. Slightly different genres, I'll say there, but yes.
Fashion designer, Coco Chanel.
Coco Chanel and Mo Farah, yep. Yes, you can tell people's interests and such like there. So, yesterday, obviously, we had the coronation of Charles. Okay, so as he was coming in, they played a particular piece of music, and the choir sang, and the piece of music that they did was Zadok the Priest. Everybody go, oh, Zadok the Priest. Did you actually know? So the funny thing is did you know that the Euro Championship basically nicked that tune? So the Euro Championship football has the tune of Zadok the Priest that was Charles came into. So around the world, there's people going, why was he crowned to the Euro Championship team? I don't understand. Other way around. But yeah, it was this piece of music, Zadok the Priest, and the choir sang. And what they sang was the following. Zadok the Priest and Nathan the Prophet anointed Solomon King, and all the people rejoiced. Okay? Now that actual phrase has been used in the coronation of kings in England since King Edgar. Anybody know King Edgar? Which year? 973. So even before the Battle of Hastings, yeah, crown king of England, King Edgar, that was said at his coronation. Okay? And it's been every single time since. In 1727, the composer Handel was approached and they said, we always have this bit. We've got the king's coronation coming up. Could you put it to music? So Handel put it to music. That's what they sung. And they've been singing it every congregation exactly in that way since 1727. Okay? But why? I mean, we're talking about a priest and a prophet in a little country thousands and thousands of miles away, thousands and thousands of years away, and we sing about this King Solomon being crowned there. And in some strange way, we're going, okay, that's relevant to what happened yesterday. Isn't that a bit bizarre? Isn't that a bit bizarre? Well, you see, Solomon, King Solomon, was seen as being the greatest king that the Israelites had. He was the one that they really looked up to. Certainly they looked up to David. But when they thought about Solomon, he was up there above everybody else. And it's interesting that for our British monarchs, that's basically who was saying, look, this is who you need to look to as an example. That's why they sing it. This is who you are setting up against. When we talk about who's the greatest in their field, if we said who's the greatest king out there, then the answer would have been Solomon. And that's who we hope Charles will measure up to. That's why we sing like that. But why? What was so special about Solomon? So basically, when Solomon was king, the Israelites grew. Okay? They grew as a nation, they grew in size, they grew in wealth, they became extremely wealthy and influential. If David was a king that was characterized by battle and going out and fighting, which he did quite a bit of, Solomon was a king who was characterized by influence. All the nations around him, were in awe of Solomon. So much so that the Queen of Sheba, to the south, travelled thousands of miles just to come and hear what Solomon had to say. She asks him loads and loads of questions, and Solomon has the answer to everything. Solomon is considered wise, and not just like generally wise, not just like those people who sit there on quiz nights going, oh, I know the answer to this one. Not just wise like that, okay? He's not just generally wise, okay? He's not even wise as kings go, because kings are expected to be pretty wise anyway, Even amongst kings, he's beyond that. He is considered wise of wise. He's considered the wisest man ever. The reason for that is when he becomes king, God says, what do you want? God says to him, what do you want? And he answers and he says, make me wise. It's back in the book of Kings. And in fact, what happens when that happens? God says to him, since you've asked for this, to be made wise, and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administrating justice, I will do what you've asked. I'll give you a wise and discerning heart, so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. He is the wisest of the wise. That's what our songs and prayers were about for Charles yesterday. That he may be as wise as Solomon. That he may be of that kind of character and that he'll be following that as well. Now, to be honest, I don't know about you, I kind of grew up. It's interesting. He's the person that's waited longest to be king, apparently, in all history. Well, certainly in British history. I grew up hearing about Charles. And when I was growing up, he was considered a bit of a loony. Some of you going, he was considered a bit odd because he kept going on about the environment all the time and organic crops and soils and kept going on about warnings about the world ending because of change to the climate and things like that. The funny thing is now with hindsight, we look back and go, do you know what? He was pretty wise in many ways. He was probably a bit of a visionary in terms of where he was going with some of that stuff. But then I can also look at Charles and I can see some of the stuff he did in his private life wasn't so wise. Wasn't the cleverest stuff that he has ever done. And, if I compare him with Solomon, I'm going to go Solomon up here. Charles, you're going to come in about somewhere there below him. My hope is that as a king, he'll gain wisdom and he'll be a wise king. But, if we're ranking kings, you're going to go Solomon up here, Charles here, and you could probably put all the other kings somewhere on that line. But according to the Bible, all of them fail in comparison. According to the Bible, there's one who's greater than all of those kings. And it will come as no surprise that the answer to this particular question is Jesus. Seems to be the answer, doesn't it, Jesus? I will say this. You'll sometimes hear the young people, whenever we come to obvious answers. Yes, I can see Will looking up here. Will, what's the answer to an obvious question when we're doing youth work? What do we always used to say? And what was the alternative answer that we give? Thank you, squirrel. The reason for that one is, so we used to joke with the young people about a Bible teacher, brand new class, bit nervous, class is nervous, she's nervous. She thinks, I'll warm them up easy, she says. I'm thinking of an animal. It's lives in trees and it eats nuts, and all the kids like, says, it's grey, it's got a bushy tail, all the kids like this. Finally, she's going, come on, you must know the answer. One kid finally goes, well, I know the answer's Jesus, but it sounds like a squirrel to me. Okay, that's the problem. In general, in Sunday school, the answer is always Jesus, but actually this time it is. The answer is Jesus. So look, you'll be thinking, hang on, Jess, you haven't actually given us a passage, so let's turn now to Matthew 12. Okay, and I'm going to read from Matthew 12, verse 38, because I've been saying how great Solomon is, and I've been saying in comparison with Solomon, Charles doesn't really come in, okay? He is not the wisest of the wise, whereas Solomon was considered that. But now we're going to learn about one greater. So, Matthew 12, verse 38. And some of the Pharisees and teachers of the law said to him, "Teacher, we want to see a sign from you." And he answered, "A wicked and adulterous generation asks for a sign, but none will be given it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of a huge fish, so the Son of Man will be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." So just before we pass on, let me just explain that bit. Is effectively, this is Jesus prophesying his death and resurrection. Verse 41. "The men of Nineveh will stand up in judgment with this generation and condemn it. For they repented at the teaching of Jonah, and now something greater than Jonah is here. The Queen of the South," that's the Queen of Sheba, okay, "will rise in judgment with this generation and condemn it. For she came from the ends of the earth to listen to Solomon's wisdom. And now something greater than Solomon is here." And now something greater than Solomon is here. Jesus is referring to himself, and he says, Solomon, who you thought was the wisest of the wise, who you thought was preeminent, who you thought nobody would ever be better than, there's someone here greater than Solomon. And he's talking about himself. Now that's a pretty big claim. Okay, so let's unpack that a little bit. How on earth can Jesus claim that he's greater than Solomon? You let's do a Jesus and Solomon comparison. So if I say one bit, let's see if you can fill in the other bit. So if I say that Jesus, his profession was he was a carpenter, what was Solomon's? King. Okay, there we go. You see how this works now. So I say carpenter, you say king. Okay, so Jesus, born in a stable. Solomon? Palace. Born in a palace, right? Jesus, born in Bethlehem. Solomon? Jerusalem. Fantastic. Okay, Jesus, no servants. Solomon? Lots. Okay, Jesus, peasant's garb, okay, simple cloak and things. Solomon? Sorry? Robes, very rich, okay. Jesus, pauper. Solomon? Rich, okay. Jesus walked about. Solomon? Road, chariots and everything like that. You know, how on earth can Jesus turn around and say, dressed in his pauper's garb, with a bunch of scraggly mates who are a bunch of fishermen, yeah? How can Jesus turn around and say, "I'm greater than Solomon"? Seems like a really, really remarkable claim. You see, Jesus is greater in the things that he said. Solomon famously said, "Look, I wrote 3,000 proverbs." Okay, you look at the book of Proverbs, that's some of the Proverbs he wrote. But Solomon apparently had like 3,000 wise sayings that he did. I just imagine the scribes, every time Solomon speaks, oh, something wise coming out of his mouth, okay? He did 1,005 songs, which is always remarkable to me. It's kind of like, you know, you'd say 1,000 songs, but it's 1,005. Those last five were obviously pretty special, okay? But it's 1,005 songs he did. He knew about fish. He knew about plants, because he talks about plants. He sent ships out sailing on the sea to go and trade. He knew about navigation and things like that. He was wise beyond wise. But the stuff Solomon knew about, plants, navigation, fish, all of those were created through Jesus. He was there at creation. He didn't know about them. He knew them. He formed and made them. You know, Solomon can say, "Yeah, I know about fish. I've studied them." It actually says that Solomon studied fish. Jesus stands on the shore and says, "Let your nets down on the far side," to a bunch of fishermen who have been out all night, and they pull in such a massive haul that they've never seen it before. Solomon knew about the weather. He knew about navigation, about ships and everything like that. Jesus stands up in a boat on the sea and calms the storm just by speaking to it. Jesus is greater in what he did. Solomon built a palace. It took 13 years to do it. He held massive, great big feasts for loads and loads of people. Slaughtered loads of animals so he could have massive, great big feasts. Built the temple of the Lord. Jesus has a far greater house that he gives to his followers. Jesus has a house prepared for his followers in heaven.
Jesus fed 5,000 people with just a couple of fish and some rolls. And through his death and resurrection, our bodies can become the temple of the Holy Spirit. Jesus is greater in worship. Solomon led his people to worship God. He sat on his throne in a position of command, and he said to his people, now we will worship God together. And he brings them to God's temple to worship God. But Jesus sits on that throne, a throne he will never lose. God's people worship him. Jesus is greater than Solomon. Go back to your tables. Have a little discussion. Little discussion there. I want to know, who's the most famous person you've ever met and what did you say to them? Who's the most famous person you've ever met and what did you say? Okay, there we go. There must be at least one person on each table who's met somebody famous. Anybody? Hang on. And comedian, but yes. And what did he say? And he said, anybody else that you met?
Asher, who was from Strictly Come Dancing.
Ah. Wow. I didn't realise they did that in Red Hill. go on then. Steve at the back, Jill. Wow. That's very impressive. Yes, your table? Chancellor of the Exchequer, yeah. Wow. Go on then. Really? Where at? Peter, you have one?
Just Tony Blair.
Tony Blair, yep. So, yep, met the. When he was Prime Minister, wasn't it? Yeah, well, yeah, he was Prime Minister at the time. Becky, you've just remembered one. Go on then, you guys.
Tommy Fury.
Wow, where? Yes, obviously. How did you recognise him? They're like, wow, that's really. Was he in the queue? That's really nice to know that he actually queues as well. Okay. Beck, what was the one that you remembered? No, you didn't. No, basically, big church day out, we're walking along, and I go, and it's Freya and Ben, and I go, it's Matt Redman. And they went, where? And they went, there. By the little bloke? No, the little bloke. Okay. And so I've now got a photo of Matt Redman being interviewed, and in front of it, Beck and Freya. Like that. So no, I don't think you actually met. So the one for me is, and here we go, Tim Berners-Lee. Sir Tim Berners-Lee. Anybody know who Sir Tim Berners-Lee is? Invented the internet. He spoke, the World Wide Web, correct. he spoke at a conference I was at, and at the end of it, he came and he was standing at the back, and I was standing, and he just came and stood right near me. I was like, oh! And he looked over, I went, can I have a photo? He's like, yeah. So, yeah, so I sent it to Catherine, it's Tim Berners-Lee! Who? But, yeah, for me, really, really special. Okay, look, we'll come back to that in a second, because I want you to think about what that famous person meant to you and how it changed you. But, look, I've said there's a hierarchy, and we've got, you know, there's kind of like Jesus, Solomon, King Charles III. Okay? What effect does that have upon us? I can tell you, look, there is this hierarchy that Jesus is superior to Solomon as Solomon's superior to King Charles. And you're going to go, yep, fine, okay. That's what the Bible says. I'm willing to accept that. But so what? Look back at this passage, verse 38. Then some of the Pharisees and teachers of the law said to him, Teacher, we want to see a sign from you. And he turns around and calls them a wicked and adulterous generation. Jesus is really critical of the Pharisees here because they fail to recognize who Jesus is. They fail to recognize who he is. You think about that famous person that you saw. Part of that was the fact that you recognized him in the crowd. And I'm guessing there were loads of people that didn't recognize him. It was you going, oh my word, like that. Okay? It's where you recognize someone that nobody else has. And Jesus is saying, you have failed to recognize who I am. Okay? You think you're wise, but the Queen of the South will condemn you. Because she traveled thousands of miles to speak to Solomon because she recognized how wise he was. And yet here's someone who's greater than Solomon. You're standing right in front of him and you don't recognize who he is. And unfortunately, that is true of the vast majority of the world. They fail to recognize who Jesus is. And they think they're so wise. They think they're so clever. But they fail to recognize who he is. Unfortunately, there's a huge thing about people going, well, if you're clever, if you're intelligent, if you're a thinker, you can't possibly be a Christian, can you? Christianity is not for the wise. When you become a Christian, effectively, you're meant to take your brain out and put it to one side because you're never going to need that. Absolute rubbish. Absolute rubbish. Solomon, the wisest of the wise, worship God. I look back on when I was growing up and the brightest people that I knew were Christians. I had an extremely bright leader in my youth group who I hated being at quiz nights with because he could just answer. When Trivial Pursuit came out, older generation remembering Trivial Pursuit, yes, I saw him, we opened the box the very first time, he'd never seen it before, he got 5 segments out of 6. You had to get 6. He got 5 segments on his first go. That's how bright he was. Okay, I saw the cleverest girl in the college become a Christian. A very bright girl. She'd asked so many hard questions that I'd ended up having to sit around with the curate at the time, who went on to run this huge, great biblical society. He said, he's a bright cookie as well. And we would sit there trying to work out answers for this girl, and she became a Christian. And the atheists hated it because they'd come up and ask her the hardest questions they could think of and she knew the answers because she'd had to wrestle and go through that stuff. I saw the president of a debating society at my sixth form college debate against the Christians that there is insufficient evidence for a loving God and 3 months later become a Christian himself. Forget about this stuff about you take out your brain when you become a Christian. Following God is for the wise. The wise seek Jesus out and respond. You see, when you met that famous person, they probably didn't change your life. Yeah, Tim Berners-Lee, I'm a great admirer of him, but I didn't rush away and suddenly go, I'm going to become a programmer. I'm a bit of a programmer, but not like him. I didn't go, I'm going to change my life. I'm going to learn how to do all that stuff because Tim just inspired me by standing next to me and letting me have a selfie with him. We don't go, I'm going to change my life simply because of that other person. But Jesus turns around and says, meeting Jesus changes you completely. It changes the direction of your life. If I say Jesus is superior to Solomon, the so what of that is that knowing and meeting Jesus changes our lives. You know, the coronation, originally there was meant to be an oath of allegiance. They originally had it planned in the service that they were going to say, look, for everybody out there, if you want to, you can say an oath of allegiance to Charles. And they backed off because they got so much bad press about it that, in fact, what they ended up changing it was everybody could privately reflect upon the support that they would give him. Do you know the problem with our society is when it comes to God, it's the exact opposite. Everybody wants to privately reflect on the support that they would give God or how God is in their lives, but no one is willing to swear allegiance and say, I will follow him. And that's what being a Christian means. That's what following God means. It's that change in response to who he is. You know, I'm guessing that looking around the room, none of us actually got that golden invite yesterday. I didn't recognise any of you in the Abbey. Yeah. Looking up to see, you know, Trev walking down, holding a ceremonial train. Oh, I just thought about that. That's pretty good. I like that one. We didn't see that. None of us got that invite. But you know what? God's invite is for everyone. Yeah, it's not for the great and the good of the land. God's invite is for everybody here. For everybody out there who we need to be telling as well. And when Charles entered the Abbey, the lead chorister came up to him and welcomed him. I don't know if you saw that. It was a real special moment. Charles had just sat down. He'd literally got himself seated. This little lad comes up, escorted by one of the courtiers, stands in front and says to the king, to King Charles, he says, "We welcome you in the name of the King of Kings." And Charles's response was, "In his name and after his example, I come not to be served, but to serve." And my hope and prayer is that that's going to be true of Charles, that he will grow in wisdom and that he will want to follow God like Solomon, that he will say, "Worshipping and following the King of Kings is the most important thing in my life," in the same way that his mother did. But more than that, I pray that that's the prayer for each and every one of us here. Okay? That we will want to seek to serve Jesus and put him first because of who he is. Amen.